is a person, the inspiration behind so many great green projects in the faith community, and last night was the culmination of that with the fourth annual Energy Oscars. I believe Sally's with us now. Welcome to the Green Front.
I'm here, Betsy. Hi.
Hi. Well, there was so much to talk about with Ed. We didn't get to talk too much about last night, but it was a very inspiring event. And you have done so many inspirational things, truly a pioneer. Tell us, let's begin with last night so we make sure we get to it. What was the award ceremony all about?
Well, we ask our member congregations to cut their carbon footprint in any way they can. And then which means that they put in energy efficient appliances, they caulk their windows, they ask people to ride their bicycles to church on Sunday, they put in compact fluorescent light bulbs, they do everything they possibly can to retrofit their building and save energy. And, of course, in saving energy, they save money, too, and it cuts their carbon footprint. The ultimate goal is to put solar on the roof and become completely off the grid and off of fossil fuel. And we had a congregation that won a prize last night for doing just that. But what we do is we give out awards in four different categories, and we nominate three or four congregations in each category, and then there's a committee of people that pick the winner. Nobody knows who the winner is until the night of the event, where you were last night and where your synagogue tied for first place on the Green Building Project.
Which was very exciting. We tied with a church, so with Equal Opportunity Awards, you both a Judeo and Christian faith got acknowledged. And that's a really great way to, you know, educate the community and inspire the community about what's possible and what, you know, communities of faith are doing around the Bay Area and around the country, in large part thanks to the Regeneration Project and California Interfaith Power and Light.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us, if you can, just go back about a decade or so, what inspired you to take your preaching, put it into practice? You, of course, are the Reverend at Grace Cathedral. If people have visited San Francisco, that's the gorgeous building there up on Knob Hill atop California Street. And Sally Bingham is responsible for not only greening that edifice, but so many other places of worship.
Well, if you just asked me to go back 10 years, that it seems like, I mean, when I think about it, that feels like a lifetime ago. But we started talking about having our congregations in California buy green, renewable, clean energy in 1997, when it was possible for a short period of time. And that's how this whole thing got started, thinking that if you were a person of faith and you knew that turning on the light switch or turning on any energy, you were polluting your neighbor's air, we started on that foundation that polluting your neighbor's air was directly in disobedient to the commandment to love one another. And that's really where it began. And then in the year 2000, our congregations that were buying clean green energy were switched back to brown power through that so-called energy crisis that turned out to be actually a manipulation in the distribution. And then we partnered with California Council of Churches and became an interfaith organization and opened the horizon in California to a great many more people than we had in the Bay Area. So suddenly we had a 50,000 congregation audience, and then it started to go national. We were funded to get a national campaign manager, which we did, and in about 4 years we had 13 or 14 state programs. To date, we have 38 state programs. We have 10,000 congregations that are involved in this work, and that reaches roughly 4 million people in the United States. We also have a similar program in Australia and one in Sweden, and they don't call it Interfaith Power and Light, but they modeled their programs after what we're doing. And in Sweden, they took one of the films we made and translated into Swedish, and theirs is called Energy and Ethics, but their program is modeled after ours. So we're almost international.
And that's fabulous news, but let's just take a moment and acknowledge the disappointing news that we have not seen the leadership we would expect, especially after this perfect storm of a summer we had, as you mentioned last night, not only with the Gulf oil kill, worst environmental disaster in U.S. history, but also the fires that raged in heat-scorched Russia, the epic flooding in Pakistan that killed so many, and, of course, the mine explosion at Massey right before the Earth Day explosion of the Gulf disaster. You'd think if ever there was a better time for our leaders to really get on the bandwagon and vote for strong legislation that's going to begin to combat climate change, this would have been the time. And yet we saw the exact opposite a week ago Tuesday in terms of people voted into office who do not have climate change really on their radar screens, and that was after the Senate dropped the ball earlier in September, after we waited so long and so many of us worked so hard to see that legislation be considered and passed, and after the House did it, you know, a year ago June, to see it just dropped. I think so many of our hearts dropped, and that's really reason for concern. And you started a program called trying to get our legislators before they drop the ball to be climate converts. I love that term.
Climate converts. And the interesting thing is I just read on the Internet this morning that, in fact, 84% of the Democrats that voted for the climate bill that passed through the House last year were reelected. And that when you actually look at who voted for and against that climate bill, most of those folks were reelected, which is really quite interesting. It's contrary to what some folks were thinking and we were told. Now, I have to say that I don't know what these legislators are thinking, and I actually question their moral integrity. And I think I'm in a position to talk about moral responsibility. Some of our legislators here in the U.S. know in their own minds and hearts that humans are creating an enormous problem with the climate, and that our dependency on fossil fuels has gotten, well, we've gotten too dependent. We're causing the climate to warm. These people know that. Two Republican legislators who had bills of their own stood in front of Congress and said, this is a human-induced problem. We have gotten our own scientific information. We've been to Alaska. We've seen the melting glaciers. We've been to the North Pole. We know the facts. And then when it came time for legislation, they turned their backs on what they know is an enormous problem. And I have to question the integrity of these people. I think these are crimes against humanity. And where are we going from here? Well, I hope that the people who understand this problem, who really get it and know it, which is going to be the scientific community, are going to pull up their bootstraps and really go to work on messaging. I believe that the American people have been duped, literally just led astray by a very conscious misinformation campaign funded by the fossil fuel industry. And when you talk to people who are skeptics and ask them where they get their information, it's not from a climate scientist. It's often from a geologist or a physicist. It isn't from a climate scientist. 90% of the world's climate scientists have come to a consensus that this is happening. And I think those of us who understand this problem and are listening to the climate scientists also need to support those climate scientists and get the message out.
And weren't you encouraged, as I was, to read this week that climate scientists are finally getting mad as heck and they're not going to take it anymore because they've been getting a heap of abuse with a climate gate thing, which was shown to be not nearly as big a deal as, of course, the deniers would have you think. And, you know, we've worked and waited so long during the Bush era, and then our great green hope, President Obama, comes in and got distracted with a few other big issues the first 2 years. And then finally we thought we were going to have our moment, and it disappeared. There are a lot of people who are feeling very discouraged, people who have even just, you know, green businesses that they feel like now the demand to grow the green marketplace and demand for their services and products is not going to be there because we don't have that leadership. So a few of us have talked about starting a green tea party because we're steamed up about what is being ignored, and we can't. I mean, nature is not going to wait.
I love your idea of the green tea. I think that's just terrific. And
we have to feed ourselves with knowledge and infuse ourselves with inspiration. And antioxidants can breathe new life into this movement that can't afford to die again.
Right. We need a grassroots movement. We need to stop focusing on the federal government and get people in the pews. I say in the pews because those are the people that we deal with. But I think we need a grassroots movement, just the way we had one during the civil rights movement and through the abolition of slavery and the end of slave trade. Those were huge cultural shifts, and that's what we need now.
And we need a two-year campaign, I think, starting right now to take us up to the 2012 elections, because if this midterm election is any sign of what's to come, then we're going to have more, you know, leaders in there who are taking us away, taking our focus away from climate change and ocean declines and all the many ecological crises we face. We are dooming the future for our children and grandchildren, and that is not acceptable. And by the way, so many of these deniers don't have any solutions of their own on climate change or anything else. And we just can't allow that to happen. I think this has to be reignited and reinserted as a wedge issue in a positive way, meaning vote for green candidates, those, you know, at the local, regional, and national level who get our crises and are being proactive, and don't let anyone else near, you know, near Washington.
Right. And I think the other thing we need to point out to folks is that if they're right and there's no warming, and we switch to clean technology, and we clean up the air, we boost the economy, we give people jobs, we save money, we will have done those things. And, you know, you can't say those are bad goals.
Exactly.
And so the things that we want to do for addressing the global warming issue are the same things that will help our economy. And if we're wrong, we've still done all those good things.
And if we're right and they're wrong,
and if we're
doomed.
Right, it's too late.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Very good point, and one I mention a lot. And, you know, when they say it'll cost jobs and hurt the economy, you and I have been doing this, you know, long enough. We go back to 2002. I know you recall because you were part of our grassroots campaign, Don't Be Fueled, Mothers for Clean and Safe Vehicles, Hybrids, Not Hummers. And we were told by Bush and the opponents of improving CAFE standards, fuel efficiency standards, it will cost jobs and hurt the economy. So we did nothing to improve CAFE standards. And look what happened. How many jobs were lost in Detroit?
They were really wrong.
GM, going bankrupt, almost brought down our economy. So don't buy that argument, folks. They've used it before, and it's completely bogus.
Well, and that's what the slave owners said. The economy is dependent upon it, and the slaves like being slaves. They were wrong. They were wrong. So
where do you get your hope and your faith, Sally?
Well, I for a long time have felt that if the religious community's voice could get loud enough to really be heard across the country, we will make the difference, because we don't come at it as politicians. We're not Republicans or Democrats or Greens or Independents, for that matter. We're people of faith who are called through our theology to be the stewards of creation. And when we see that creation is being hurt, we can get involved and speak out on behalf of God and creation. And I think that is going to bring a kind of a moral integrity, a values message to this discussion. And when it starts and it gets, and as it gets louder and louder, it's going to be the voice that changes everything. Just the way it did it with civil rights and the end of slavery.
Reverend Sally Bingham, I thank you. God bless you. Keep getting your voice out there. I love to be one of those who's amplifying it. You are onto something. You have done so much, and yet there's so much work to be done. So carry on, and thanks so much for joining us on the Green Frontier.